Imagine basically the equivalent human labor of a journalist or an academic scholar or a person writing Wikipedia pages being done for you in matter of seconds instead of hours and at your demand, so that you can keep asking whatever you want, completely personalized to you, knows what you want and what you don't want, and available for free. That's basically what exists today, and that is Perplexity.ai. So that's what we're building. We're calling it Answer Engines. By virtue of focusing on this one thing, which is boring but incredibly, incredibly useful, we nailed it.
I am with Aravind Srinivas, the CEO and founder of Perplexity AI. We're here to talk about the future of search, the future of large language models and generative AI. Aravind, welcome to the program. Why don't we kick things off and tell us a little bit about what you see as the future for both of those things, search, generative AI, and how do those things work together?
Thanks for having me here, John. Future of search will not be links. We used to go to the libraries to learn about anything we wanted. We used to manually pick the books organized by the title, first letter of the title, pick it up, go to the bibliography, the final organized set of keywords, and then do all the searches ourselves. And then we figured all this was unnecessary manual labor and we can just directly Google it. But then the idea was you would Google it, it would pull up the links and you would click on a link and you would still go through and sift through the links and read different links and come to the answers that you wanted. Now, whatever happened to libraries that Google did to libraries is happening now to Google itself, which is you don't have to sift through links. You don't have to open many tabs and read through the pages. You directly get an answer instead of links. Or Google sometimes gives you answers, which is extracted parts of the top link. The problem, though, is it is not robust to SEO, and so often it ends up being more annoying than useful. Now, for the first time in two decades, you have this amazing reasoning engine, almost like the steam engine of intelligence, that's the best way to understand it, called large language models, LLMs, also referred to as generative AI. And now what they can do is do all this manual labor that you're doing now, which is entering the keyword on Google, opening the links, reading through them and getting the answer. If somebody does that for you and gives you the final summarized paragraphs or paragraph with appropriate references, so that you can trust what it says. Imagine basically the equivalent human labor of a journalist or an academic scholar or a person writing Wikipedia pages being done for you in matter of seconds instead of hours and at your demand, so that you can keep asking whatever you want, completely personalized to you, knows what you want and what you don't want, and available for free. That's basically what exists today, and that is Perplexity.ai. So that's what we're building. We're calling it Answer Engines, conversational answer engines. The fastest way to get answers to any question and the fastest web research companion that you can have, an expert researcher at your demand in your pocket all the time. So that is just one application of generative AI though. There's just a ton of other applications, being your marketing co-pilot, being your sales co-pilot, being your poem writing co-pilot. Like if you don't know how to write poems and you have a loved one and you want to impress them on their day on a date, or like you want to like be sweet to them on your anniversary, and you're trying to write such a personalized poem that only you both have shared context to, but you don't have the skills of a poet, or you're trying to brainstorm ideas for a gift to give, or surprise date nights, or an expert tutor for your kid, you don't have the time. You want them to be really smart, but you don't have the time to dedicate. Or they're coming and asking you all these questions of like, why is the sky blue? Like, you know, and you're like, you know stuff, but you don't exactly know how to like explain it to a seven-year-old. And then you can quickly pull this up as a co-pilot that can help you be a better dad. So many applications that, you know, were just never possible before. This reminds us all of Steve Jobs' quote, right? Which is, don't give people what they are asking for. Give them what they don't even know they want yet. And then once they have it, they just absolutely want it. So that's what generative AI is. It's not something people ask for. But now that they have had access to it, they're like, oh my God, I don't want to go back to the old tools. I don't want to go back to writing every Google Doc myself. I don't want to go back to writing every line of code myself. I don't want to go back to writing my speech myself, or I don't want to go back to like clicking on links again. And this is just the beginning. So there's like trillions of dollars of economic value going to be created because every human hour or labor has a certain intrinsic value. So it's basically amazing. It's just you're replacing a lot of manual work, and that itself already has a current dollar value. But because of that, every human becomes a lot more empowered and they can do a lot more in less time. And so the value of human labor per time also goes up. And so that way we create incredible economic value that was never possible before, even bigger than the internet or even bigger than the mobile phone. And it's exciting times. It's just beginning. We should all be part of this revolution.
There's so many things to unpack there. We're going to try to unpack that into sections now and drill into them. But first of all, let's begin on this whole idea of links, actually, because as a person who started playing around with some of these chatbot systems built on language models, even before kind of the whole explosion of ChatGPT, like it was very apparent that if you get a result, you immediately have to go and verify all the data that you're actually receiving because these things hallucinate. I see that with every language model. Like I used Anthropic recently to help my team win this hackathon in LA for Tech Week. And Anthropic was great for that because we needed it to kind of create fantasy role-playing game kind of scenarios. And hallucination, as one of my previous guests, Hillary Mason, said, is a huge advantage if you just want it to make up lots and lots of fiction. It's problematic where if you want it to give you like accurate data about things. Like during the course of this hackathon, I really became interested in, well, how do we optimize the whole chat process? Because it's actually, for people that aren't aware, it's typically done in this very inefficient way. Like you just keep concatenating chat on top of chat and you end up having this massive prompt in the background that you pass off to it. So like, there's got to be a better way to do this. So I asked both ChatGPT and Claude, like, okay, well, what are the optimizations? And they basically completely hallucinated things that sounded amazing when I read them. And then when I searched online, like the papers that they were referencing made none of the claims that it was claiming, which brings us to Perplexity, I believe, because it seems like that's the problem that you actually saw and seems like you're solving, because you're giving me cited research, cited web pages to support the search results. So in essence, you're saving me all this added new labor, although the language model interaction is really interesting. You're saving me the extra labor involved in going and like doing all this research to see if the results it gave me are even accurate whatsoever. So first of all, is that a decent take on how you spotted the problem here? And I'm just curious, like, how are you going about that? Why are you able to do that? Why aren't Bard and ChatGPT, et cetera, like, why aren't they already doing that?
We obsessively focus on this and nothing else. So that's why we are really good at this one thing, right? ChatGPT is a bigger platform than Perplexity, no doubt. You can look at the traffic. I think as of today, Perplexity has like 20 million visits a month and Bard has like 130 million maybe. And ChatGPT has like 1.3 billion. Us, 6x bigger as Bard, 60x bigger as ChatGPT. That's the current state. Now, why are Bard and ChatGPT not able to do what we're doing? So I have very simple explanations for that. ChatGPT's biggest reason for growth was the thing you mentioned. People love the hallucinations. Hallucinations actually have a market value. Like, But we were like, okay, that's already a cornered market. There is one big leader there. We may not have the virality and the amazingness that people feel when... Okay, so here's the thing. If you have a friend who's always correct, always, always factful and correct, versus a friend who's like saying whatever they want and like sometimes they're just saying like absolutely ridiculous things, who would you invite to the party?
I would bring them both. That would be a fun party.
Fair enough. But what I meant to say was like Perplexity's persona is more like this professor who's like very scholarly, and ChatGPT's persona is more like this really smart kid who knows a lot, but not always correct, but who's like a know-it-all, but says things in an entertaining way. There's a reason that the second is more like has a lot more traction, and obviously our brand and OpenAI's brand, pretty different. By virtue of focusing on this one thing, which is boring, but incredibly, incredibly useful, we nailed it. And when they tried to do the same thing, which is ChatGPT has this browser plugin powered by Bing, it's very clunky and doesn't exactly work. When they have a big product and they're trying to do everything now, it's sort of like very hard to compete with another company that's just like allocating hundreds of hours on this one single thing. And for Bard, the answer is like, they have the best search index in the world, which is Google. But it's amazing that they went after ChatGPT instead of us. And that tells you that that was a reactive product more than a... So they were like, okay, like there's this core Google search thing. People come here for search. And there's ChatGPT that somebody else has. And we need to have something of our own that's competing with it. And that's sort of Bard's reason why it's even there. So that's why it's not able to do what we are doing. It doesn't have citations. It makes up stuff. It's not as fast. And we are very happy in the position we are in because we can just like focus on nailing this one problem, which is having so many scopes to innovate here. Like the way you render the answer, the way you kind of like make even more complex researches easy, improve the latency even more.
I also notice with Perplexity that the information that it's able to respond to also includes current information. I think like the ChatGPT cutoff is September 2021 or something, but I was able to enter current events and it was able to give me intelligent responses there as well. Can we drill down a little bit more into the technology and how you've approached it? So how are you identifying citations to the content of the answers that you supply and what you've described as an answer engine? And also how are you keeping it current by continuously looking across the internet to pull in these additional new sources? And then I guess the third part of it is also just how do you verify that the sources you're pulling in are accurate for the questions being asked?
Yeah. So there obviously a lot goes behind the scenes to give you the experience that you have, which is amazing. And in some sense, it's like playing the orchestra. Person playing the keyboard, and then there's a person playing the violin. And like you're playing the orchestra. Like, and these are like different parts, like query, the search index, the links, the content within the links, and the reasoning engine, the LLM, that takes all the content and processes them and rewrites them in a format consumable by you, adding the citation to the appropriate paragraphs. So all that is like basically the orchestra. How do we do this? We basically create a persona of ChatGPT that is meant to be like a person writing a Wikipedia article. If you write a Wikipedia article, you have to cite everything you say. Now, what if you make an LLM have that persona where it only says stuff it can cite? So every sentence in Perplexity has a citation for that precise reason that if you wanted to make a ChatGPT-like system only say truthful things, what is a measure of truth? Like, how can you inject that personality? One way to do that is to just ask it to behave like a Wikipedia content writer or a journalist or an academic scholar. And so that's the core idea. Only say stuff you can cite. You know, it's kind of like interesting. Citations were the core founding story of Google. Because Larry Page was inspired by the academic citation graph of like important papers are those that get cited by a lot of other papers. And that idea was mapped to the web, saying important web pages are those that get cited backlinked by other web pages, and that led to PageRank. The founders of our Perplexity, three of us have PhDs, and the citations thing, we just obsessed over it. We know in and out of how it works. How can we bring that nature to these large language models? The output of that is what you see in the product.
One of the things I'm really curious about is how different sources could be weighed and incorporated into a result. So I'll just give you an example that I played around with a little bit on Perplexity, and it at the risk of treading into controversial search topics, I'm not going to take a position at it. I'm just going to tell what Perplexity. So I said, like, was COVID caused by a lab leak? So it came back with it. It wasn't like certain or anything, but it gave me a result that was essentially, well, there's some evidence that it may have been caused by that. And here's what the evidence is, which was really cool because I could look at what the sources are. If I recrafted my prompt a little bit and I said, what is the evidence against Alablik, it came back with a response that was more like, well, all the evidence is that it is from a biological or a zoonotic origin, and that it that's probably what it is, but here's some evidence from some of these things. It seems like there could be like a whole new version of the future of SEO that will take place in this. So search engine optimization, where it'll become kind of like chatbot optimization, like convincing chatbots that you are the authoritative source to kind of protect your own worldview. And both of these sides, obviously, there's a scientific basis for some of them. There's also politics involved and people wanting to believe in one versus another for whatever, you know, biases they happen to have. That seems like a super complicated problem to unravel in search meets LLM. How do you think about these kind of complexities, and how do you weigh different sources of evidence?
I kind of always go back to Wikipedia, because that's sort of like, what are we doing? Mm. We're basically doing a dynamic personalized Wikipedia pages on the fly, right? So how do Wikipedia content writers handle this? Like, you can write a Wikipedia article that cites anything, right? Like, you can cite a tweet, you can cite a blog post, but they don't do that. The moderators only allow you to cite platforms that have high reputation scores.
Notable sources.
Notable sources. Then that gets to the question of what is notable. And like, you can have some rough heuristics for this. Like, one measure of notability is like there's a lot of traffic to it. If something is completely fake, then obviously, even though it might be entertaining in the short run, if it's just going to keep spreading fake news, people are not going to use it. Okay, take Truth Social. Right? I mean, you know, like whether it's truthful or not, but it doesn't have as much traffic, right? I think you can't just spew fake news and have a website that has high traffic every day. So that's also kind of why like New York Times or Financial Times or Wall Street Journal has a lot of traffic, has a lot of readers. So people kind of trust what it says. And if these newspapers do a bad job at it, then they're going to lose viewership and readership. So that's the sort of inherent social structure around like having enough checks in place to say truthful things. And then that can be used as a heuristic of notability, like some measure of page rank. And then that can be used as a measure of like prioritizing which domains to cite. If there are domains that are frequently cited by Wikipedia, then those are good domains. And LLMs can bootstrap from that because that's already work vetted by humans. So there's like ways to get around this. And like we are thinking about these things. And then eventually beyond a point of time, we'll be able to build a sufficiently good trust score, page rank of the web, trust map of the web. And then we should be able to use that to improve the search quality even more. It's sort of like writing a good paper, good research paper. A good research paper eventually gets cited by other good research papers over time. Once it gets cited by other good research papers, the information propagates. Even if your website may not get directly cited, because that information is broadcasted in other websites, because what you said is fundamentally true, it'll have a way to make it to the search results. So it's kind of interesting. It's even more powerful than click streams and click logs, where people just who can gamify the click process, get their links displayed higher. But I think LLMs are sort of like a death blow to them in some sense. Like you really have to produce good content. And it's kind of like giving power back to the genuine content creators who basically made the internet, you know, they were the reasons for the internet to actually become big. And then it got taken over by all the spammers. The OG users of the internet were all like genuinely interesting people.
Yeah. And it seems like one of the opportunities for language models and applications driven by language models is to restore a little bit of nuance to some of these conversations, because so much when you go down the rabbit hole of a lot of these online conversations or arguments that are going on, there's so much politics and embedded bias within some of these conversations that you can kind of get trapped within these echo chambers and come to believe that there aren't even any variant viewpoints of something. Like going further down this lab leak example, because I think it's just an interesting one where there does seem to be interesting scientific evidence kind of on both sides of this now. And although it remains inconclusive, it's interesting because you can do a search in this, which can present you with both sides of this. So did this other feature in Perplexity where you can create a thread and I asked it for the evidence. I really like this idea of suggesting related follow-up questions so that you can kind of like intelligently navigate that content. Because one of its follow-ups was, well, what is the evidence for and against the lab leak hypothesis? So I clicked on that and it gave me pretty good follow-up where it organized things and it said, okay, here's the arguments for, here are the arguments against, everything was cited. It seems like this could help people a lot in not only understanding their own viewpoint. Like I feel like people go online to just sort of collect more evidence to reinforce what they already believe. But if we could actually get people to understand other people's views and why they came to believe that and not ignore that, that could be super powerful. And I see that potential here. I see that not only here in Perplexity, but in language models in general. Like it can surface information into this more synthesized format that's different than go to Google, get some web page with its bias inserted all over it in a way that's not apparent to you. What are your thoughts on this idea of nuance and incorporating multiple views?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of our purpose, you know. Nuance is hard, especially doing it for humans. Nuance is actually pretty hard. This job that's being performed by Perplexity of giving you this nuanced and detailed viewpoints with appropriate citations and surfacing content from multiple different views in the most consumable way. That job for a human to perform is pretty hard. And that job has intrinsic value for other humans that we are like already pretty clear of what value we're adding to human society. Yeah, the COVID lab leak is a thing. In fact, it was one of my test queries in the beginning too, when I was trying to like stress test our product and many other examples. To be fair, we can improve on something. I think like right now the LLMs have a clear bias. I'm not going to say it towards which side. People know that. So I think that can be improved with the base model itself. And I think OpenAI is working on that. And we can also do some work there. Yeah, there's more work to do in making sure that your bots are like having no opinions of their own and are not like arbiters of truth, but they're more like helping you seek truth. So be the maximally truth-seeking, knowledge-seeking platform on the internet. That's our mission, basically.
I'm curious about what you can tell us about the LLM that's powering this. If I recall back 6 months ago when we first met, I think you told me it was GPT-3 or something.
Correct. We still use... Majority of the heavy lifting is still being done by GPT 3.5 and 4, but we have begun rolling out our own LLMs, and I think we are pretty excited about doing more of that. I would just say that LLMs are becoming commoditized and more like parts that you buy to build amazing cars. Of course, the parts will be expensive and the one with the best engine will win, but our purpose is sort of to build the best product experience and make sure that users can get the best answers on one side. And so, until a point where our LLMs are like as good as OpenAI's, like we don't need to wait till that moment happens for us to already serve our users, right? I believe the cost of LLMs and the price you pay all are going to go down and the capabilities are going to advance. That it'll be a great future to live in where we can all like use multiple different databases. Like it's basically like using different versions of SQL or something like that. I think it's going to become more like few suppliers exist and like a lot of people use that and like build amazing products that last many years.
What's your thoughts on these open source language models like Llama and Falcon 40B? And some of them seem surprisingly competent for given the hardware that you can run them on. Like, what is the trajectory of that? And also your thoughts on decentralized open source versus like centralized behind an API gateway kind of language model systems?
I think it's great that Llama leaked. It's kind of like the lab leak, you know. I think what it did in terms of people taking it and making it really fast on MacBooks and like trying to create a world where people can tinker and have their own LLMs that they kind of completely control is amazing. That gets into the decentralization part of it, right? Where like if John wanted to have his own LLM that represented him and always worked for him, would he trust Sam Altman with his data, or like would he trust himself? And like he would trust himself as long as he can do all the training and deployment himself. And then that's the question of like, if you have the tools and if everybody becomes a programmer, then that's amazing. And if a centralized LLM like GPT-4 helps you write the code for maintaining your decentralized LLM and training on it and doing deployment on it, that's a great world to live in, right? Like you have some things that are only personal to you that you don't share with anybody else, and you have the whole stack on your laptop. And there are some things that you're okay, like, you know, the queries, if whether it comes from John, if people know that, it doesn't matter. As long as it helps you get the job done, then that's also great. And I think we live in a world where both are true, and there are like some few tinkerers who might want to play with their own things, and there are some people who just want to use the centralized things. And I think their ideal world would be like, if one helps people become better at dealing with the other. Like I don't think everybody has the skills to go understand what llama.cpp is, how to like install it on their MacBook, what is even terminal. But if you can learn all that with a GPT-4 powered system, and then take that and like train it on all your emails and chat and like make it really behave like you. Or you could train it on someone you really admire and like you could talk to them. And you're paying for the time and the compute it takes to get that. But the value you get out of it is so much higher that you're okay with it. And there may be a world also where like you could, these become like lifetime subscriptions where someone else does the whole packaging for you. Like you would give them all your data and like they would train a model separately for you and package it all into like one executable, and like you buy that executable and run it on your MacBook, and all your data is immediately deleted from them. You might have to pay like $100,000 for that, or like some $10,000 for that, just like how you buy an iPhone or a MacBook, and then you use it forever. Like, that's an interesting company to build, right? I haven't thought, I just came with the idea now. Like, let's say you, John, like you don't know how to do these model training, but you go to a friend of yours who knows how to do it. And it's almost like a foundry, right? They go to they do the manufacturing for you. And maybe there are some devices that everybody might want, like an AI Steve Jobs. This person doesn't need to make one device just for John. Like, once he makes it, he can tape it and like use it for anybody and then sell it for like a few $1,000. So that'd be cool. I can see a world where we have this, a lot of these individual LLMs, and there's also a world where there's a central LLM which is so smart and replacing human knowledge work, and both could coexist really nicely.
My goal is to clone the neural networks inside my brain into some silicon format so that I can replicate myself a lot of times. And just because I gave this talk at MIT a few weeks back, and I the point I made is that we're going from, you know, the online world being a place where first it was just about connecting and being there, and then it became about creativity and making things online, which is sort of like online games and blogs and all the various ways you can express yourself. But the next generation here may be more about sending our will online. So if I could train like a language model or some kind of AI that replicates the things I care about, approaches problems the way I do, it could go and do work for me. It could come back and share things with me that it learned to make me smarter so that I can reincorporate all this knowledge back into my biological neural network. So I'm excited about that future. That said, you pointed out one thing that people are afraid of, which is the potential to replace some forms of knowledge work, maybe all forms of knowledge work. Some people are super afraid about all of this stuff. I don't really want to get into the whole existential risk type things, but maybe to bring it into something that might feel a little bit closer, what are your thoughts on like the economic period we're about to enter into? At the very beginning of our conversation, you talked about how the value of a unit of time can start to go up a lot, but getting there might also be really messy. So just, you know, thoughts about the pathway, the roadmap into the future of these technologies. What are your thoughts?
So I think everybody will feel like a chief executive officer of their own company. And everyone will feel like they're a growing stock where they get a lot more done per unit time. I mean, why are we all employed, right? Like, we are all employed because someone else is achieving something much bigger than us, and we're being part of that. Now, what if like you can just run your own business? What do you actually need? Like, you need to code a little bit, not so much. And you need to do some marketing, you need to do some sales, and you need to find users. And if AI helps you do all this with just like you yourself or one other person at best, instead of building a 10, 100 people company, that's pretty amazing. Like, you're going to, and if these employees are not even humans, and like you could even have AI copilots work for you, and just one person overseeing all that, that's even more amazing. Like, it's, you don't have to like, you know, be as stressed as a startup founder is today or like 5 years ago. That feeling of having personal assistants, expert tutors, expert marketers, like basically having access to the world's experts. Information is wealth, right, John? Like you just can make way better decisions with better, more data. And if people will go wrong less, like less often, people will be right more often, and then people will be able to do a lot more things. People will feel more empowered. Is that a bad future? I think not. Like, but they should learn how to capitalize on it. Just like how people capitalize on internet or phones before others got more economic value out of it before the rest of the population, the long tail came in. That power law exists for everything. And I think that'll exist here as well. Except that the only worry I have is that power law here will be more extremely peaky and long tail. Like the ones who are very early in on AI might get a lot of benefit compared to the ones coming later on. But the ones coming later on also are going to have a great world to live in. That's sort of the world I imagine. Like, people will be more independent. There'll be a lot of smaller startups that are billion-dollar companies. There'll be a lot of economic value created. No one company, other than, like, you know, the company that has the best largest language model, will be controlling the whole field. And there's, like, a lot of space in for other people to grow.
So you just mentioned expert tutoring, which I think is a really interesting application of this technology. So I actually just had a conversation with my son the other day. He's about to turn 12 and we homeschool our kids. I was talking to him about the skill of writing, and he made a point to me of like, well, why do I need to learn to write anymore? I'll just be able to go to ChatGPT or some version of that, which will get better and better. Why is writing even a useful ability? And so I said, well, okay, you do have a point. Like, I think that these tools will be able to help you an incredible amount in the future. My thought is, like, we're not that close to it helping you articulate your ideas that are unique to you and compose them together. It may get there at some point. It's not quite there yet. But it also led me to think about education and learning and the process of, as you put it, having a co-pilot there for you as you learn and write and kind of explore what it is that you actually think about things. So I gave you a lot to work with there, but I'm curious about your thoughts in how this impacts the whole future of education.
Yeah.
Obviously you spent a lot of time in education. You have a PhD. So like,
yeah,
you've gone through every aspect of that, but how is that going to change in the future? Will PhDs be something that someone get in the future if there's all these AI technologies available that will have immediate access to expert knowledge of all kinds?
I'm trying to understand this better myself. So when I was, I was a pretty good student. Like, you know, there's this thing called IITs in India, which is pretty hard to get into, and mm-hmm. you had to train for it for multiple years. So I did all that, Olympiads. My sense is that if math and coding, just because ChatGPTs are good at it, doesn't mean you shouldn't try to be good at it yourself. I think it's just going to help you to be even better. Basically, there were many times when I just didn't know like how to like understand a concept. Like, let's say I was doing physics assignments and I was just not understanding like some electromagnetism principle. And if I can have access to an AI that can explain that to me really well, and I can bug that AI hundreds of times until I truly understand it, which no, even you as a dad, John, might not have the patience to explain to your 12-year-old like some concept about Faraday's laws, like, you know, hundreds of times. You might be like, hey, man, I told you like enough, like, you know, whatever. If you don't get it, whatever, you know. But AIs are not going to say that. It's going to like, okay, kid, sure. You know, here's the thing. Yeah, I get it here. And so that, I would find it amazing. Now, as for writing itself, there is this thing about like AI written content right now that feels very like mid, you know, not mm-hmm. very insightful to read. It's great to read for, you know, like a legal language that you might want to write, or if you're trying to write like a newsletter, things like that, it's kind of okay. But if you're just trying to write an email, that sort of personal touch to it doesn't exist. So my sense is that, maybe I'll draw upon my own personal experience here. But when I used to be in school, I used to be really good at every subject other than English. Not that I was bad at English, I was scoring pretty well, but each subject had the topper, and I would always just like top every subject, but English, I would not be the topper. I'd be like the second or third. And I'd be like, hey, why is that I'm not able to? And I would go and ask the teacher, why is it that I'm not the topper here? And like, you know, like I'm doing well. And she'd be like, you know, there'd be a part of the exam where you have to write your own stuff, the writing section of the exam, where there'd be an imaginary situation and you got to write an essay or articles. And she'd be like, your thing sounds like how I would read in like a example essay. It doesn't have imagination or creativity in it enough. And the topper in English, they would be more creative. So that's something I would say is amplified even more in the era of ChatGPT, where the basic thing is already really good, and that's ChatGPT. What if John had written this? I want to know that. Where is your personality? So the need to have your own personality and the need to exhibit it is even more now in the era of ChatGPT written content. Basically, like, if Steve Jobs says something, another thing I'm reminded of is a measure of a smart person is like, you shouldn't be able to predict what they say. Like, if you ask them a question, if a sign of a smart person is you shouldn't be able to 100% predict. You could have a 70% chance like he's going to predict, but there's always this variance in them that keeps them interesting. Otherwise, they're boring. You can model them perfectly and you can have the conversation with them with a chatbot of them, right? And I think that's kind of going to be true for kids from now. Like, the interesting ones are those who can say stuff that ChatGPT cannot say.
I'm thinking of this whole feedback loop that could emerge, though, which is we have AI co-pilots who will become increasingly trained on ourselves, not just sort of using like a ChatGPT. Yeah. Maybe it'll help us figure out who we are.
Yeah, it'll help us figure out who we are, and we'll all become even more creative, and we'll all become even more like, we'll all wonder about parts of the universe or parts of our day-to-day society that hasn't already been understood well enough. We'll focus our attention on that, and like, it'll drive human society more forward. And then that data can then be ingested by the next generation of LLMs. And then after that, we'll focus more on the next set of things. And I feel like it's just the best way for human IQ. Like the joint IQ of human plus a co-pilot is much higher than human without a co-pilot, right? And not saying basically an LLM is not smarter than the smartest human on the planet right now. It is not. I'm not worried about those existential risks. I'm just amazed at like the possibility of like human plus LLM together working way better than the human without the LLM. It's like day and night difference. And I think that if it's amplified at the scale of our population, it's just going to be amazing. It's the Renaissance moment, right? Like, we all have access to truth now in a much more higher bandwidth fashion than ever before.
Yeah, and it's also important to see in that it isn't just individual humans with their AI co-pilots. It's the whole network of humanity.
Correct.
And the fact that individuals have been elevated in that way, then working with each other. So it's a network intelligence.
And we'll coexist. Like, you and your son, and then Perplexity, and like character AI, like if four of you can be in a chat room and talk to each other, right? It'd be amazing. And like, those are experiences that we would only like have, we wouldn't even have dreamed of before. And I think this is all going to be like, you'll take it for granted by 10 years.
It's a beautiful dream, and one that I share. So let's dream a little bit more for a minute. Like, first of all, what are you excited about over the next 12 months? Because everything is moving so, so fast in this whole market, you know, both the market generally, as well as Perplexity, like what's on your roadmap, how is the world going to look different even in just a year from now?
I think I just want everybody to have access to the smartest person that they can talk to for learning about anything and everything, and help them do any research that they want to do, and minimizing any barrier to using this sort of assistant for everybody. That's the next 12 months, at least for me. Get it in the hands of more people and like get them all to be smarter. Make everyone smarter. If people are smarter, their life choices will be better. And their life choices are better, they'll have a higher quality of life. And if they have a higher quality of life, they'll be happier, making the world a better place.
Let's double click into that. So a year from now, 2 years from now, billions of people are smarter. How is the world going to be different?
They'll just make better life choices. They'll have more time. They'll spend more time in a more wise way. They won't waste time doing mundane things. They'll dig deeper into things. They'll be more thoughtful about what they say. They'll have more compassion. They'll learn how to be more compassionate using an AI. They'll know exactly what to do in their lives. They'll just nail their jobs. I'm not saying everyone's going to do this, but at least a few people will start doing this, and that'll spread eventually to the rest of the society.
That would be exciting. It's the world I want. It's the one I'm working on. That's why I use AI, and that's why my company is incorporating AI into what we do.
I mean, I have a lot of respect for like how fast you are into the new things, and you know, like you've been talking about generative AI for like probably longer than anybody else I'm aware of. So,
well, my life mission is helping people be more creative, and the media of our time is games. So the idea is, how do you just help people craft experiences and online environments around everything from spatial computing to massively online games? So like, that is the expressive media that exists now that's much bigger than music and movies and so many other things. So my mission really is for any form of creativity, just help people be more creative. Like, you know, my big transformative goal for the world would be like, what happens if you could 10x creativity in the world? What if we went to like a billion highly creative people in the world, whether creativity means media and content and storytelling or science or making things of value to society and civilization? So that's what this stuff is going to do. And it's super exciting. And I encourage everybody to check out Perplexity.ai. Go try it if you haven't yet. Chances are you haven't tried it yet for the numbers we gave in the beginning. You've probably tried ChatGPT, but you should definitely try out Perplexity, because I think it gives you really interesting answers, and it'll lead to your ability to like look into the information behind the results you're getting and kind of speed up, accelerate your own learning process, which I think is an incredible thing. Because if you can learn faster, you can innovate faster, you can iterate faster, you can make better things for the world.
Yeah.
So Aravind, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. Everyone check it out, and we'll put some links in the show notes as well, so you can go and find things.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you.